This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Tehran has summoned the Danish ambassador to lodge a strong protest over the attack on Iran's embassy in Copenhagen. Israeli forces shoot dead two Palestinians, including 14-year-old, in the occupied West Bank. Plus, French President Emmanuel Macron warns that Europe is in for harder winters over the coming years amid the continent's energy crisis. Hello everyone, thank you for tuning in to World News. Now, Tehran has summoned the Danish ambassador over an attack by a knife-wielding assailant on the Iranian embassy in Copenhagen. The foreign ministry says that it's lodged a strong protest with the ambassador over Denmark's failure to protect the embassy and its diplomats. Meanwhile, foreign ministry spokesperson Nasser Kanani has cited the attack and other incidents at Iranian diplomatic missions in Europe in recent weeks. He says the link between such acts of violence and the West's political support for rioters in Iran is undeniable. On a Friday morning, an assailant broke into the Iranian embassy in Copenhagen. He tried to stab the ambassador but was stopped by his staffer. The assailant injured that staffer and damaged vehicles in the parking lot before being arrested by Danish police. The aftermath of anti-Iran violence in London continues to be keenly felt by institutions and individuals who found themselves at its epicenter. One of the most shocking episodes of mindless violence occurred outside the famed Islamic Center, where worshippers had gathered to mark a special religious program. As the Met police continue to search for the perpetrators, Amina Taylor speaks with two people at the very heart of the story.
It was the night chaos and violence came to England's Islamic Center as marauding crowds, intent on raising more than their voices, lay siege to the usually peaceful premises. More than a week later, there is still evidence of the violence that boiled over. Amongst the victims that night was a longtime Quran teacher at the center who was set upon by a baying mob.
Suddenly the people, so many people were sitting there standing, started calling me and swearing and shouting as they surrounded me, and the other people came starting hitting me, kicking me, and swearing without stopping. And I couldn't understand. I was so surprised from them. So how can the people become this violent? One of them, he kicked me from the over my my kidney, and I still have a problem with my kidney. And I went to the hospital, saw the doctor, and so my knee as well. So it just had a very big scratch in my knees and bloating. I still have problems with my leg, right leg, and I can't walk properly. After this 10 days, more than 10 days.
Said Mousavi is the director of the center and is leading the charge for justice.
The Islamic Center is following its legal path, and a case against the riots has been filed, and it is ongoing based on document and evidence.
Days after violence rocked the Islamic Center, there is still a visible police presence. And whilst those inside do everything they can to protect themselves and their loved ones, it's hoped that should there be a repeat of this atrocity, the authorities will do more.
Until those responsible are brought to account, there are still questions.
But why they did that in that time, I was so surprised. I think it wasn't only one group. I think it was very small groups of the people who were against Islam and against the humanity, against the kindness, against... I think they were like this, some of them.
There is now a call for calm and dialogue as the only paths forward.
If you want people listen to you and respect your idea, you should respect the idea of the other as well. That is why I want to ask them, please come and talk and have a dialogue with each other. And then with the dialogue, we can listen to different ideas. And of course, even in Quran, we have a specific advice that tells us you should listen to different words and choose the best. But different word, not different attack.
Meanwhile, the Metropolitan Police is continuing its identification of individuals responsible for the anti-Iran violence that spilled over on British streets. Amina Taylor, London.
Delegations from the Caspian littoral states have gathered in the Russian capital to participate in the second Caspian Economic Forum event that has become the largest platform in the post-pandemic period to discuss topics including cooperation among member states. Marina Kortanova reports.
The second Caspian Economic Forum has been held in Moscow. During the event, issues including developing trade and economic cooperation, interaction in the field of ecology, energy, transport, and logistics were discussed. Delegations from the Caspian five littoral states, namely Russia, Kazakhstan, Turkmenistan, Iran, and Azerbaijan, were present at the event.
The countries of the Caspian region will have to work in the current turbulent conditions of the global economy and geostrategic tensions. The West is putting increasing pressure on other countries in an attempt to maintain the existing world order.
The Caspian region possesses a significant part of the world's gas and oil reserves. It is of high significance, especially at a time when the whole world is facing an unprecedented energy crisis. The Iranian authorities came up with a new proposal to address those issues.
In order to unify and harmonize tariffs for rail, road and sea transportation, expanding trade and economic cooperation, we propose to establish a committee for cooperation in the field of transport, transit and customs business.
The Islamic Republic, given its geographical location, has very good opportunities to conduct operations in the oil and gas sector, as well as providing energy supplies to other regions. Iran has stressed the need to accelerate the unification of the country's electric power networks with those of the Caspian states.
The main purpose of this forum is boosting the economy of regional countries and to enable the Caspian states to use their opportunities to develop trade and economic cooperation, culture and tourism. Also, everyone should not only use the opportunities of the Caspian Sea, but also protect it. We are actively working in the development of the North-South Transport Corridor. The shipping lines of the Islamic Republic of Iran have allocated 300 containers for the transportation of goods to Russia.
Apart from what was said and proposed at the event, the forum also had good news for the member states. Cruise shipping on the Caspian Sea is set to begin in 2023 for the first time in history.
More than 1,000 delegates from the five Caspian Sea littoral states, as well as Belarus, Kyrgyzstan and Uzbekistan, have taken part in the forum. In the meeting, the participants agreed to adopt decisions to enhance all-out cooperation among countries in the Caspian region. Marina Kartunova, Moscow.
Israeli forces killed two Palestinian teenagers in the occupied West Bank. And earlier, we're joined by our correspondent in Ramallah, Mona Kandil, for the details.
The Israeli soldiers have killed two Palestinian teens in different, in separate incidents. The first one, 14-year-old Adel Dawood, was shot dead by the Israeli soldiers. The Israelis claimed that Palestinians were holding a protest against the seizure of Palestinian land in Qalqilia, and then Palestinians went to protest near the Israeli separation wall, where Israeli military checkpoint is there as well. and the clashes have taken place there, and the Israeli forces opened fire towards Palestinians, killing this 14-year-old Palestinian teenager. Elsewhere in the occupied West Bank near Ramallah in Al-Mazra'a Al-Gharbiya town, Palestinians have protested and rushed to the streets of this village, Al-Mazra'a Al-Gharbiya, in order to face an attack by Israeli settlers. Group of Israeli settlers have raided Al-Mazra'a Al-Gharbiya town, and they were throwing the stones against a Palestinian house there. Of course, as usual, the Israeli soldiers were protecting the Israeli settlers. They opened fire at the Palestinians, wounding at least one, wounding at least two. When the Palestinians were transferred to hospital, one of them, 17-year-old Mehdi Ladadwi, succumbed to his injuries. The Palestinian presidency and the Palestinian authority and the different Palestinian political and Islamic powers have denounced the killing of those two Palestinian teens and said that the Palestinians will continue to resist the Israeli forces and Israeli military because this is a natural response, resistance and struggle to the ongoing and non-stop crimes being committed by the Israeli soldiers.
A mass rally has been held in the Gaza Strip to mark the 35th anniversary of the establishment of the Islamic Jihad movement, Ashraf Shannon reports.
Thousands of Palestinians have rallied in the blockaded Gaza Strip to mark the 35th anniversary of the outset of the Islamic Jihad movement. People from all walks of life joined to show their support. The Islamic Jihad movement is highly respected by all Palestinian factions and has always been a uniting factor among them. The movement was founded by the late Dr. Fateh Shikaki, who was inspired by the Iranian Revolution and the teachings of the leader of the Islamic Republic of Iran, Ayatollah Ruhollah Khomeini.
Today we pay tribute to our founder Fathi Shakhaqi and all the martyrs. Our path is a very long one and paved by the blood of martyrs who sacrificed their lives for the sake of Islam and for the sake of Al-Quds.
Ziyad al-Nakhala, the Secretary General of Islamic Jihad, addressed the attendees via satellite link. During his speech, al-Nakhala stressed the unity among all Palestinian factions and praised the axis of resistance against the Israeli regime.
Gaza is part of the axis of resistance, and this rally stresses that armed resistance is the key to the liberation of Al-Quds and all of Palestine. People attending this event are affirming their allegiance to the resistance and to the Islamic Jihad movement.
The Islamic Jihad movement and its leaders remained blacklisted by the European Union and the United States for refusing to recognize the Israeli regime.
We are all here to support the resistance against the Zionist regime. Our people are sending a strong message to the whole world today about their unwavering support for the resistance. We will continue our struggle until the liberation of Al-Quds.
Islamic Jihad supporters want the Israeli regime to know that their movement is a force to be reckoned with.
35 years on, the popularity of the Islamic Jihad movement continues to grow due to the movement's strict adherence to armed resistance against the Israeli regime. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
Europe is feeling the pinch of an acute energy crunch amid tensions with Russia over the war in Ukraine. Now, the French president has warned the winter of next year will be even harder than this coming winter for Europeans in terms of gas supplies. Emmanuel Macron says Europe will intensify talks with gas suppliers and coordinate with big Asian partner countries on gas purchases. He was speaking at the summit of European state leaders in the Czech Republic, where they're discussing a gas pricing system to protect their consumers from rising energy bills. Majority of European Union states back the cap on gas prices, but then Denmark, Germany, and the Netherlands are opposed to it. They say the measure will make it difficult to buy gas their economies need and curb incentives to reduce consumption. Homeless charities in the EU say they are at a breaking point due to a spike in number of people seeking support. A conference in Brussels hears that the crisis is set to worsen this winter due to growing inflation and interest rates. Jerome Hughes reports from the Belgian capital.
Leading experts at this European Economic and Social Committee conference in Brussels on Friday said homelessness in the EU has increased by 70% in the past decade. A conservative estimate suggests there are 700,000 homeless people across the 27-country bloc.
We see now with the energy poverty and the increasing vulnerability that are happening around Europe that we are very, very concerned that those figures will also be increasing further. And that's why we believe that it's really important that we all join forces.
Young adults in precarious jobs are in one of the highest risk categories. If you have a mortgage, then repayments are going up due to interest rate hikes. If a landlord has a mortgage, they are passing on extra charges to tenants. Homeless people don't vote. So is there an incentive for politicians to take action?
If in such a short time so much can be done for Ukrainian refugees, and also if so much could be done for homeless people during the corona pandemic, I think we can do the same in the future. It's just a question of political will.
Those who have experienced being homeless say it's a very difficult situation to escape from.
Everybody thinks you are a little bit shady or something like that, and nobody trusts you, and you don't trust anybody. When people start to trust me, I start to doing better things for me, for myself.
Critics say the current economic crisis and resulting social misery could have been avoided if EU leaders had prevented the war in Ukraine through diplomacy. It has been suggested by some political commentators one way the EU could ease its growing homelessness crisis would be for Western nations to adopt a foreign policy that is less aggressive, which would avoid further displacement of millions of more people. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
North Korea says its missile tests are for self-defense against direct U.S. military threats as tensions run high on the Korean Peninsula. A North Korean aviation official says the launches have not harmed the safety of neighboring countries and regions. The International Civil Aviation Organization Council recently condemned the missile tests. It said they pose a serious safety risk to international civil aviation. North Korea has fired six missiles in the past 2 weeks amid what Pyongyang sees as Washington's provocations. U.S. and South Korea held joint maritime exercises involving an aircraft carrier on Friday. Washington has also announced new sanctions in response to North Korea's latest missile launches. Now, 3 weeks ago, before Brazil's runoff presidential vote, leftist candidate Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva is leading a far-right President Jair Bolsonaro in the recent opinion polls. The latest survey shows 49% of voters support Lula against 44% for Bolsonaro. Two have resumed their electoral campaign ahead of the second round of the ballot slated for the 30th of October. In the first round, Lula won 48% of votes against Bolsonaro's 43%. Pollsters were widely criticized after the first round for having greatly underestimated support for Bolsonaro. Election campaign has been Brazil's most bitter and divisive in decades. Thanks for tuning in, and goodbye for now.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.
in the limelight.
Experts are blaming big oil companies for climate change, and in particular the recent Hurricane Ian, which caused destruction and suffering in the U.S. state of Florida. While oil executives are raking in astronomical profits, the issue of climate change and the tragedies it causes is out of the spotlight. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media for further details. Stay tuned for the first part. According to Common Dreams, watching images of hurricane devastation is, of course, disturbing. But imagine what it's like watching all the destruction and suffering while secretly knowing you bear responsibility for it. It would be like watching media coverage of a murder while realizing that you have a bloodstained knife in your hand. You would be desperately trying to figure out how to discreetly dispose of that awkward utensil before anyone started connecting the dots. We could call this the knife holder's dilemma, and it helps us imagine how oil company executives might feel watching horrifying scenes from Hurricane Ian, where survivors were warned to watch out for alligators in floodwaters. But for decades, those inside the boardrooms of major international oil companies knew well that the burning of fossil fuels, the source of their multi-billion dollar profits, was driving climate change. That fact is nailed down nicely in the Petroleum Papers, a new book by Alberta author Geoff Dimbicki. He quotes from a Truva internal oil company documents that reveal how, for at least 40 years, Exxon executives deliberately covered up the catastrophic danger posed by fossil fuels, a danger confirmed by Exxon's own internal research. By now, most conscious humans know that burning fossil fuels causes climate change and that climate change is bad. Yet meaningful measures to stop fossil fuel burning remain elusive, even amidst endless media footage of hurricane devastation. Imagine if that footage was accompanied by headlines and commentary linking the horrific scenes to climate change, and then further linking them to big oil. TV networks could, for instance, display split screens with one screen showing hurricane destruction and the other showing big oil executives being pressed by reporters about how much their companies intend to contribute to the multi-billion dollar cleanup. Fortunately for oil executives, that doesn't happen. Rather, media coverage sticks to the details of the climate ordeal unfolding, sometimes referring vaguely to how this is all part of some new climate reality, but with no knife in sight and certainly no one holding it. Rarely is there any sense of urgency conveyed about what we must do to stop this from getting even worse. There is lots of talk about how to rebuild more securely for future hurricanes, but little talk about how to slash the carbon emissions that cause all this disaster. They just keep rising. They have moved from ignoring climate change to denying it to accepting it without ever really trying to stop it. When Hurricane Ian hit the U.S. state of Florida with a wall of water recently, TV networks ran hours of coverage. Why aren't there more such interviews? And why aren't oil executives routinely put on the media hot seat whenever there is a climate disaster? In other words, almost every day. Oil companies bear huge responsibility for these disasters. It's not just that they knew the truth and covered it up for decades. It's much worse. They did this by subsidizing a massive network of think tanks and pseudo-experts who attempt to cast doubt on climate science, not by refuting it, just by creating enough uncertainty about it in the public's mind that politicians could get away with doing nothing. Stunningly, while climate change threatens to render the Earth no longer viable for human life, the role of oil executives in this epic tragedy remains out of the spotlight. According to Bloomberg, scientists say climate change infused Hurricane Ian with 10% more rain. Analysts find that global warming intensified the storm's rainfall, which contributed to deadly floods across Florida. Climate change made Hurricane Ian's most extreme rainfall about 10% worse than it was without two centuries of greenhouse gas pollution, according to a first-take analysis of the storm by two U.S. climate researchers. Their rapid analysis, which they shared on Twitter, looked only at rainfall and not other critical climate metrics related to hurricanes, such as strength, intensification, and sea level rise. Ian has devastated the state of Florida with severe flooding among the impacts. Joe Biden said it is likely to rank among the most destructive storms in the United States history, and the full death toll will likely not be known for weeks. Damage estimates range from $68 billion to $100 billion.
It's the show where we discuss the most topical of topics, the most controversial of controversies, and the most important affairs of affairs.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Back to Reality, and thank you for joining us. So, I am Asma, your humble host. I am a student of English literature. And in here, I have with me two very dear guests, Zainab and Bita. Welcome.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. It's a really big pleasure for me to joining you for this discussion. I am Bita, a medical student from Iran.
And assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. I'm Zainab Sadat. I'm from Iran and I have my MA in TFL, teaching English as a foreign language. And it's my pleasure to be here today in this discussion.
Thank you very much, both of you. Thank you for joining us in today's episode. In many cases, as you travel through different parts of the world, you would see that people are different in color, in culture, in their different rituals, in their religion, and whatever. The thing which is very interesting is that the place that you've been born in, I mean, the geographical condition of your life, the kind of people that you've been born to, you know what I mean? The culture of people is going to have some effect on you. I don't know if you agree with me or not.
I do agree. You know, there is something like jabr. There is an obligation. You know, you cannot choose
which is obligation,
you
actually.
Yeah, exactly. You cannot choose your family. You cannot choose your wealth from when you're born. And there are something like that. But the thing is, right now we're talking about the effect of these matters on your personality.
You know, there's this thing in literature that we have it, which is the naturalistic point of view. It says that nature and your parents, your genes are going to define
nature
you.
Nature and nurture.
Yeah. These are the things that are going to define you, which is actually, which has got an which has got a pessimistic point of view.
And even in this century, even, it is a controversial discussion, I think, that even scientists cannot prove the point that it's whether it is the genes or the situation in the atmosphere you are living in that will, you know, somehow decide that what you are. Mm-hmm. And the thing is, it's not only moral or spiritual, it is even physical.
Yeah, exactly.
And this physical aspect is even stronger than that.
Which
part.
Is the color, the accent,
yeah,
the language.
Exactly. Even the race.
So all these things have been affected by the place you've been born with and the parents who mm-hmm. are siring you. But you know, I have a different view of this.
You're welcome.
Of this topic. Yes. You know, I personally believe that our innate, our nature, decides most of our features.
Oh, so you side with those people who talk about fitrat and the thing that is called the soul, I guess.
You know, Asma, I think that most of our features are decided by our fitrat, as you said, but a meager percentage might go for geography, weather, the place we are born in, and that is not deniable. But the fact is that if your parents teach you how to be kind, if you are born and raised in a good family who are against violence and teach you not to bother people, that would make a lot difference.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So you do believe that it is the thing that makes a difference is you yourself.
Yourself to the most part. I cannot deny that.
So 70 part of your character is made
70
of
is a good number.
Yes.
That's a good amount.
And then the rest goes to geographical conditions, parents.
Yes, and even if you look at the statistics, you can mm-hmm. see that the rate of crime in Asian countries is higher than those of the Western countries.
You are opening a box of worms, Pandora's box.
This amount is, you know, higher in European countries because of their rules. For example, you know, carrying gun in, you know, American countries is something
illegal.
Free. Yeah.
Yeah.
But in our country, you cannot just, you know,
Asian countries, not Muslim countries.
Actually,
I'm talking about non-Muslim countries.
You mean, for example,
Asian countries with certain geographical features.
But the thing is, it's better to just not make it that much national or something.
Yeah.
We're talking internationally about human beings right now.
Yes.
And the thing is, you are talking about fitrat. You know, the meaning of fitrat means a special
instinct.
Yeah, instinct and the special way of creation you have.
Yeah.
We are all humans, so we have some same, you know, way of being created. And this is not the fact, actually, we are going to talk about. Because, yes, we have two eyes, we have two hands. And physically, for example, we are the same, mm-hmm. but we have differences. And we are talking about these little and delicate differences. And this is the matter, actually.
Things that matter are the little things.
Yeah.
Well, you know, Bita, there's a very interesting thing, which is psychological. I don't know if you remember anything about collective unconscious. They say that all the human beings are one.
Mm-hmm.
And considering this one human being, we all have the same set of thinking. For example, all of us would believe that a spring is associated with the color green, with fertility. It is so blissful. We all think that winter is depressing. Actually, not me, everyone else. And so on, you know. The color black is the color of depression. The color white is the color of purity.
Happiness.
And whatever. I'm just giving you the idea of collective unconscious. They say that we all have the same thing in our brain. So no matter where you have been born, no matter what kind of parents you have, all of you are going to have the same sort of thinking, the same key points, you know. Like, imagine you in your brain you have a bookshelf and the books have been put there, which is going to act like the archetypal pattern that we call it. I do agree with the idea of collective mm-hmm. unconscious. We all have, because it is just like what we call it in our religion, in Islam also, we call it fitrat.
Mm-hmm.
So what Zainab is talking about is mostly like a fitrat as a collective unconscious. Mm-hmm. We all have the same unconscious.
Mm-hmm.
The truth is that the place you're going to born in and the people that are going to surround you are going to have a lot of effects on that. Let's go for a little break. We'll be back in no time. Dear audience, stay with us.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Back to Reality.
So, welcome back to your audience. This is IRIB English Radio. We are having a discussion in your Back to Reality. Imagine that you have been born in a country which is suffering from war. At an age that you need protection, you need support from your parents, you need love, you need to go to school, have a very grateful schooling, and then have different sort of friends, enjoy your childhood.
Even some basic needs like food.
Food, even nurture. So as a kid, you're suffering from the most miserable situation. So this is going to affect your adulthood, your youth.
Exactly.
You're not going to be as optimistic as other people born to a more prosperous family and country are.
The thing is, we're talking about the effect that, for example, your geographical part that you were born in has on you. The thing is, no matter where you live, no matter where you've born, no matter which country, which family you're from, there is a beautiful quote that tells, no matter you were born poor, the problem is when you will die poor. So you can change your life.
Change,
you know, and you can make that change no matter where you are, no matter where you live, no matter how other people affect you.
Yeah.
But the thing is, the inner and outer things will affect you. You cannot just control them. You cannot even try to control them.
Yes.
You know what? And it's not only about some moral issues, even economical issues and something like that. For example, when you are born in a family which is poor, your facilities and your opportunities that you have in life for growing up is less than the person who
exactly.
were born in a family that is kind of rich or something, even in educational system. That we have, you know, for example, when you are wealthier, you have more money, you can be better. And this is something that you cannot just deny it.
Yeah. So, Zainab, there is this obligational features that have been imposed on us,
mm-hmm.
which is the place we've been born and the things that we talked about, the parentings and the friends that we have, the culture, society, country that we've been born in. It would actually have an effect on us, but then comes our own characteristics. We have been nurtured in that society, but at the very same time, we grow older, we can read more of books, we could have different experiences, we could try to nurture our soul in a way that is going to help us be more developed,
yes.
that is going to make those problems have less effects on me.
Yes.
Now, let me just talk about something very much interesting. You know, there was this documentary that I was watching. It was talking about different traits of people of a special place. It was talking about this fact that the people who have been born in this area of the world are more generous than the people who are born in this part of the world. The people of this part of the world have more satisfaction with the facilities they have. For example, if I call facility a luxurious house, a luxurious car, and too much of money and whatever, to that person, satisfaction is just having a shelter. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And the way they were just bringing evidence through people made it clear for me that geographical points actually have some effects on our life. And it is going to make us, for example, generous, make us, I don't know, more satisfied because you have been surrounded with kind of people that are all like you.
They've been nurtured. That are surrounded by us.
And you have been nurtured like them.
For example, the people who live in the south part of Iran are known for being gregarious.
For their warmth.
Yes, for their warmth. And I don't know other characteristics.
Yeah.
People of north are known for their, for example, good taste of food.
Yeah. The place that you've been born is going to have some effect on you.
But, you know, Asma, if you go in depth of these people, we can see that this does not hold to be true for all of them.
You cannot generalize it.
Yes, it's not generalizable.
Yeah, of course.
And maybe these are some cliche. I'm not sure whether these characteristics are true about these people or not.
Yeah.
What about morals, Vita? The place that you've been born and the parents you have and the educational system that you've been through, the university that you go, is going to have some effects on your religion,
not only
on your
effect,
moral.
I think it is the most important factor, in my opinion, actually.
Yeah, of course it
because
is.
Because morals are not something that you just, you know, that comes from your genes or something. Mm-hmm. It is your situation, exactly the situation you're in it. I think when you're living in a place that you just don't feel comfortable, you have to go to another city, to another country, even, you know, even we have a verse in Quran
exactly,
that tells you, okay, you know, the angels, for example, asked the sinners that, why are you here? What was your situation in the earth? And they told, like, they tell the angels that we were in a bad situation when we were on earth. And then angels tell these people,
the
okay,
reply comes,
why didn't you migrate? Yeah. You know, and it is the point.
And we have it even in other verses that there are some people who would emigrate in order to keep their faith.
We have a verse that tells us to go and see the world and how and just see and observe that how God
to
created other
the
people.
Yeah.
Exactly. And the thing is, your family, I think, is the most important source of your morality, your behavior, and anything you have in this life.
Yeah, I would say that it's not just the family, because the university and the school is going to have...
But where you go, for example, when you go to university, you know, it depends on the way your family think about, for example, the education system. And for example,
but trust me, Bita, sometimes your friend would have a large impact on you.
I do agree with that.
Because not all people have the same characteristics. Mm-hmm. Some people are not so strong and they do not have a school of thought for themselves.
And even sometimes the effect of friends, I think, is stronger than family. Because you want it to be stronger.
Yeah, yeah.
No matter where you are, no matter where you live, no matter what situation you have, you can change it.
Exactly.
You
know, the debate of nature and nurture has got a long history. You can study, you can develop yourself, educate yourself in a way that you would look like a grown-up.
Yeah.
Like a person who've been elevated into a higher level. Until another session, I bid you farewell.
Ya Allah, Ya Rabb al-Alamin, Ya Rahman, Ya Rahim. يا ربي لدي أمار عزك
يا الله
يا رب العالمين يا رحمن يا رحيم يا ربي لدي أمار عزك لتصي دليلتك once again.
IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
in the limelight.
While the world politicians are busy opening public lands to fossil fuel developments, the fossil fuel-driven climate emergency is worsening. According to a new report, 2021 saw record high greenhouse gases. Sea levels and ocean heat and climate change shows no sign of a slowing. In this regard, we have taken a look at the world media for further details. Stay tuned for more. Common Dreams website wrote, atmospheric greenhouse gas concentrations, global average sea levels, and ocean heat content surpassed previous records in 2021, underscoring the extent to which the fossil fuel-driven climate emergency is worsening in the absence of meaningful efforts to fundamentally reorganize the world's political economy. That's according to the 32nd Annual State of the Climate Report, an international assessment involving more than 530 scientists from 67 countries compiled by the U.S. National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration's National Centers for Environmental Information and published recently. Key findings from the report, as summarized by NOAA, include: Earth's greenhouse gases were the highest on record. The major atmospheric greenhouse gas concentrations, carbon dioxide, methane, and nitrous oxide, each rose once again to new record highs during 2021. The global annual average atmospheric carbon dioxide concentration was 414.7 parts per million ppm. This was 2.3 ppm greater than 2020 amounts and was the highest measured in the modern observational records, as well as the highest in at least the last million years based on paleoclimatic records. The annual average atmospheric methane concentration was also the highest on record, and the annual increase of 18 parts per billion ppb was the highest since measurements began. The annual increase in methane has significantly accelerated since 2014. The annual increase of 1.3 ppb for nitrous oxide was the third highest since 2001, contributing to a global annual average atmospheric concentration of 334.3 ppb. According to the new report, Earth's warming trend continued. A range of scientific analyses indicate that annual global surface temperatures were 38-tenths to 50-tenths degrees Fahrenheit above the 1991 to 2020 average. This places 2021 among the six warmest years since records began in the mid to late 1800. The last 7 years, including 2015 to 2021, were the seven warmest years on record, and the average global surface temperature has increased at an average rate of 14-tenths to 16-tenths degrees Fahrenheit per decade since the start of record-keeping, and at a rate more than twice as high since 1981 per decade since 1981, according to a range of scientific analyses. And ocean heat and global sea level were the highest on record. The ocean sequesters the vast majority of the excess energy trapped in the Earth's system by greenhouse gases and other factors, estimated at more than 90% over the past half century. Global ocean heat content, measured from the ocean surface to a depth of more than 6,000 feet, continued to increase and reached new record highs in 2021. For the 10th consecutive year, global average sea level rose to a new record high and was about 3.8 inches higher than the 1993 average. the year that marks the beginning of the satellite measurement record. NOAA Administrator Rick Spinard said in a statement, "The data presented in this report are clear. We continue to see more compelling scientific evidence that climate change has global impacts and shows no sign of slowing. The report includes a map depicting just some notable climate anomalies and events in 2021. There were 97 named tropical storms during the northern and southern hemisphere storm seasons last year, well above the 1991 to 2020 average of 87, NOAA noted, adding, the North Atlantic Hurricane Basin recorded 21 named storms, the third most for the basin, behind the record 30 cyclones in 2020 and 28 in 2005. Category 4 Hurricane Ida was the most impactful storm in the Atlantic, the agency added. At $75 billion in damage, Ida was the costliest U.S. disaster of 2021 and the fifth most expensive hurricane on record since 1980. Super Typhoon Rai was the third costliest typhoon in the history of the Philippines, causing about $1 billion in damages and more than 400 deaths. Given its focus on 2021, the report doesn't examine extreme weather disasters from this year. In the past month alone, however, large swathes of the world have been contending with record-shattering droughts, famine, heat waves, and flooding. In Pakistan, for instance, hundreds of people have died and millions have been displaced as entire communities are inundated due to weeks of monsoon rains, turbocharged by planet-heating pollution. Despite generating less than 1% of those emissions, Pakistanis have been forced to endure their worst consequences, with the World Health Organization warning of an impending spike in malaria, dengue fever, and other water and vector-borne diseases. With many communities hit with 1,000-year floods, exceptional drought, and historic heat this year, said Spinard, it shows that the climate crisis is not a future threat but something we must address today. The latest State of the Climate report was published just 2 days after the International Energy Agency and the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development reported that subsidies provided by 51 governments around the world to prop up the production and consumption of coal, oil, and gas nearly doubled to $700 billion in 2021, while the industry raked in massive profits. The website of CBS News also wrote, last year saw record levels of major greenhouse gases, including carbon dioxide and methane, released into the Earth's atmosphere, according to an international climate report. The annual State of the Climate report, published recently in the Bulletin of the American Meteorological Society and led by scientists from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration's National Centers for Environmental Information, also found that global sea level and ocean heat reached record highs in 2021. The data presented in this report are clear. We continue to see more compelling scientific evidence that climate change has global impacts and shows no sign of a slowing. With many communities hit with 1,000-year floods, exceptional drought and historic heat this year, it shows that the climate crisis is not a future threat but something we must address today as we work to build a climate-ready nation and world that is resilient to climate-driven extremes. Greenhouse gas emissions from human activities are the most significant driver of observed climate change since mid-20th century. According to the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, warming the climate as they build up in the atmosphere. In 2021, the global annual average atmospheric carbon dioxide concentration was 414.7 parts per million, 2.3 ppm greater than the amounts measured in 2020, according to the latest state of the climate report. That marks the highest amount measured since 1958, the start of the instrumental record, and in at least the last million years, based on paleoclimatic records. The report found it was also the fifth highest growth rate in modern record. According to CBS News, two other major greenhouse gases, methane and nitrous oxide, also saw record concentrations last year. The annual increase in methane was the highest in the modern record, and the growth rate of nitrous oxide, the third highest it found. Last year was the fifth or sixth warmest on record, depending on the data set referenced, with the last 7 years, the seven warmest years on record, according to the report. Global ocean heat content measured from the ocean surface to a depth of more than 6,000 feet saw record levels in 2021, indicative of a steadily increasing heat in Earth's system, according to the report. Meanwhile, the global sea surface temperature cooled compared to 2019 and 2020 due to the ongoing La Nina conditions in the tropical Pacific, though it was higher than the 1991 to 2020 average, the report found. For the 10th year in a row, the global average sea level rose about 4.9 mm to a new record high, according to the report. The level was about 97 mm higher than the average recorded in 1993 when satellite measurements began, the report stated.
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio.